Steele's the ponies sent out wolves to scout the white men's farms for horses as they rode eastward. On their return, they would pick up as many as they could gather without undue risk. The scouts brought back reports that they were not finding many horses. They brought back other reports that visibly disturbed the raid leader. The Texans were gathering what horses they had and holding them in corrals or herding them under guard. Moreover, the settlers seemed to be banding in numbers at certain points as if for defense. Steele's the ponies called the men together in council under a bright full moon.
The Texans act as if they know we have come among them. Our risk is greater now.
It is because of that child. He allowed himself to be seen. We might as well have had an owl in camp.
The owl was considered a malevolent spirit, a harbinger of misfortune, even death.
It could be that some sharp-eyed Texan noted our tracks. It is impossible to cover the trail of so many, however we may try.
Our medicine has gone bad. Kill the boy, and perhaps it will be good again.
Kill one of our own?
He is not one of us. He is a Texan. You cannot turn a mule into a horse.
Badger Boy drew close to his brother. He searched the faces of the warriors, wondering if any seriously considered what Tonkawa Killer said. He was unable to read their expressions in the moonlight. Steele's the ponies pushed himself protectively in front of Badger Boy.
This boy is Comanche now. If there is to be killing, let it be of the real white men, not my younger brother.
Killing of Comanche by Comanche was almost unheard of. But if it did occur, it would call for vengeance by the victim's kin. Steele's the ponies made it clear he considered Badger Boy to be of his blood. Tonkawa Killer made a placating motion with his hands.
I will not hurt him, but if the spirits move against him, I will not interfere.
Now, the light is good. Let us see how many horses we can gather.
Steele's the ponies and three others approached the corral silently.
Tonkawa Killer, open the gate. Now, go very slowly. We don't want to wake anybody. Badger Boy, stay here and keep watch.
Badger Boy stayed behind as the two snuck into the corral. They quickly rounded up most of the horses and started to push them through the gate.
They noticed us! Quickly! Run with what you can!
Badger Boy joined the retreat while several warriors dropped back to intercept any Texans foolish enough to pursue. Badger Boy would have joined them had they not included Tonkawa Killer. Instead, he remained with the main body, driving westward. The bright moon yielded light enough for them to see where they were going. After a short time, Steele's the ponies held up a hand.
Did you get any scalps?
They turned back when they saw us. They never gave us a chance to kill them.
There will be others. They are like flies on the buffalo.
Huh?
Not looking like good news coming at us.
Not looking good at all. That looks like blessing and wave in front, though. It's not what I think it is.
Grab your rifle and saddle your horse. There's Indians about.
Comanches?
Not sure. But it's been more than a year since we've seen any tribe this far down the Colorado River.
I wonder why they've come so far.
Don't matter and don't care.
I'll fetch our horses, Mr. Rusty.
Catch your horse, Shandy. But you won't be going with us. The women and children are gathering at my place. They'll need every man we can spare to protect them.
Yes, sir, Mr. Tom. If that's what you'd rather, I do.
I'd be much obliged for you to protect my wife.
Rusty appreciated that Blessing was protecting Shanty's feelings. First, by telling him he was needed, and second, by not making a point of the old fellow's age and limitations. Blessing's large frame and commanding presence masked a benevolent spirit. Rusty spotted Jed Hoskins with the group. The man couldn't hide a smile when Shanty was told to stay with the women and children. But Rusty certainly knew none of that mattered right now. Until they had routed the Indians from their land, they were at war.
How'd you hear about this?
A farmer, farther west, had come upon an Indian and fired at him with a shotgun. Too excited to aim straight.
Was he sure it was an Indian?
Said he wasn't wearing much but breech cloth and moccasins, and he had a bow slung across his shoulder. Afterwards, some of the neighbors went scouting and found tracks. Looks like there might be 20 or 30 passed by going east.
Going where they'd expect to find the most horses. Slim pickings these days. Any notion where the Indians have got to?
Somewhere east. Well, we'll keep riding until we run into them.
That happened sooner than Rusty expected.
Hey! Hey! Hey!
Whoa, everybody!
Oh, thank the good Lord. We're in bad shape. Blessing, you got to help us.
What is it?
Comanches. Must be 100 of them right behind me, I swear. Driving a bunch of horses. Must be 100 of those, too.
How far?
2, maybe 3 miles behind me. They've been killing folks right and left. Must have killed 100 by now.
We'll see if we can head them off. You want to go with us?
The farmer looked over the group. Blessing had picked up several men, bringing the number to 18.
There ain't near enough of you. There's 100 of them, maybe 200.
Tell you what, do. You keep riding. Spread the word so nobody gets caught unawares.
All right. I tell everybody.
You heard what he said. I don't think there's near as many Indians as he claimed, but anybody who wants to turn back is free to do it.
Rusty looked at Preacher Webb, hoping he might, for the minister was obviously weary. But neither Webb nor anyone else showed an inclination to leave.
Let's go find us some Comanches.
They were easily found. Rusty saw the horse herd first. A rough count showed him about 20 head, a fraction of the farmer's wild estimate. For the Comanches, this had been slim pickings. Moreover, only half a dozen Indians rode with the horses. Rusty suspected the raiding party consisted of considerably more, but the others were probably away looking for additional horses.
I don't believe they've seen us yet. Let's don't give them time to think about it. Charge! We're under attack!
The roan horse did not wait for Badger Boy to decide what to do. It turned and broke into a hard run away from the shooting, away from the stampede. Badger Boy pressed hard with his knees and clung to the mane to keep from falling off. He knew he should stand his ground and fight. That was what Steele's the ponies would do. But he had no control over the horse. He freed his grip on the mane and brought his bow down from his shoulder, drawing an arrow from the quiver and fitting it to the string. He found a white man target coming up swiftly beside him. The roan jumped a small bush just as the arrow flew. Badger Boy knew he had missed.
You see how that little Indian boy missed me?
Rusty saw an Indian cut in from behind, war club swinging. He was riding straight for Hoskins.
Hoskins, watch out!
The Indian whirled, about to finish the job, but saw Rusty coming and changed his course.
Hoskins, you all right?
I'm fine. You go get him.
Badger Boy struggled to fit another arrow while on the roan. He saw Tonkawa Killer deal a strong blow to a Texan with his war club. Badger Boy smiled. But because he was watching behind him, Badger Boy didn't see the fallen tree ahead. The boy landed hard, and the horse followed. Directly on his leg. The roan staggered to its feet, kicking Badger Boy's stomach on the way. For a moment, through the dust, he saw a dark figure looming over him and thought it must be a Texan come to finish him. He was too numb for fear. The face was Tonkawa Killer's, and it was malevolent. His war club, marked with blood, seemed larger than it had ever been.
You have spoiled our medicine, white boy! Now die!
Badger Boy turned quickly aside so that the blow missed his head but struck his shoulder. Then Tonkawa Killer was gone.
Good job, man.
There's still one over there.
You sure?
Yeah, I saw him fall from his horse after he tried to shoot Hoskins.
And be careful, Rusty. Never know what an Indian's gonna do.
Well, you ain't too good at avoiding trees, I see. Or keeping your legs in one piece. But the Comanches I know don't really abandon their kin.
Being this close to a Texan couldn't mean anything good. But Badger Boy was ready to live up to his name. He reached for his knife.
Whoa there. You're nothing but a shirt-tail kid. You're likely to hurt yourself lunging out like that. There. Now that we're rid of that knife, we can have a little talk. You don't look much like most Comanches. Blue eyes like that. You're a white boy, aren't you?
Looks like you got one, Shannon. How come you ain't killed him yet?
Well, look at him. He's no Comanche.
Yeah, let me see. He's got a white skin, sure enough, but underneath it, he's pure Comanche.
You got a name, boy?
Tina and Nagisuba Naide.
That didn't sound much like English.
Comanche stole me from my real folks a long time ago. Like as not, That's what happened to him.
Yeah, maybe so, but raise a dog pup with wolves and you can never get the wolf out of him. Better if he was to die right now.
But he won't. Not unless a broken leg can kill him.
They've turned him into a savage.
I could have been where he is if Mike Shannon and the preacher hadn't grabbed me.
Well, the way I heard it, the Comanches didn't keep you long enough to hurt you much. Looks like they had this youngin' long enough to ruin him for life.
Looks like you've caught yourself a bear cub, Rusty.
Take a close look at him, Tom. He's white. Reminds you of anything, preacher?
Yes. Reminds me of you, a long time ago back at Plum Creek. But you were a lot younger than this. Do you speak English, son? Do you have a name? Do you remember your mother and father?
Ma.
Your mother. Do you remember your mother?
Ma-er.
I believe he understands the word mother. Maybe he can remember more if we keep at it.
I think I know who he is. Remember the time... Preacher, you were there too. Rusty, when we trailed after Comanches, you had taken a woman and a boy. That was before the war started. We found the woman dead, but we never did find the boy.
She'd been butchered and scalped. I'm never going to forget the sight.
I'd ministered to the family, even baptized their baby boy. Their name was Pickard. I even remember the name they gave their boy, Andrew. They called him Andy. Andy Pickard.
Andy. Andy. Andy.
Then he's the one we hunted for but never found.
Looks like it. You were lucky we found you so quick. He wasn't as lucky.
Maybe his luck is fixing to change. Preacher, what can we do about that broken leg?
Set the bone if we can, and tie a splint on his leg so it stays set. It'll hurt him real bad for a minute.
Hoskins, me and you will hold him while Preacher sets that leg.
He's liable to bite. A man could get hydrophobia.
I'll hold him, me and Rusty. You see if you can find a broken tree limb. That'll do for a temporary splint.
Now stay still, Andy.
Damn kid bucks like a mule. Preacher.
I've got him. Just a second. Oh, fainted dead away. It's just as well. He won't be fighting me while I brace up his leg. Hoskins, you find anything yet?
Afraid not, preacher.
All right, then come on back. Rusty, hand me your rifle.
My... All right.
There. Blessing, hold it.
Right there?
Yeah. This should do for now, but a rifle and some shirt don't make the best of splints.
What'll we do with them?
If somebody go fetch a wagon, we'll take them to my place. Me and Shanty will look after them.
Like as not, you'll wake up dead some morning with a knife between your ribs.
I don't see how I can do anything else. I've been where this boy is. I look at him and I see me laying here in his place. You understand, preacher?
I do, but this boy is not you. He's been raised to fight. Like as not, he's been raised to hate you and me and everybody white. He may never get past that.
You're a preacher. No matter how bad a sinner may be, you give him a chance, don't you?
That's part of the calling.
I'm a long ways from being a preacher, but I've learned a lot from following you around. I've got to give him his chance, like the Shannons gave me.
Steele's the ponies led his men far from the site of the battle. They had to leave several of their horses behind in their haste to leave with their lives. To their disappointment, he and the warriors he had taken with him had managed to find only 6 more horses. He had begun to worry about the reception they would receive when they returned to the encampment with less booty than expected. Now a darker worry burdened him. He had left his brother where he had thought he would be safest, in the care of Tonkawakiller, as fierce a fighter as he knew. Tonkawakiller hated the boy, but surely he would live up to the responsibility Steele's the ponies had placed upon him. He took a look at the group he had with him. He would catch up with the rest of his men shortly, several miles south. He saw Tonkawakiller, but not Badger Boy. His throat tightened.
Where is my brother?
Nobody answered. The men who had stood guard on the horses looked away from him, most staring at the ground.
Tonkawakiller! Where is my brother?
Tonkawakiller sat up straight and defiant on his horse.
The last time I saw him, he was running away.
You lie! He would not run away.
I told you many times, he was never one of us. He is a Texan. Perhaps he ran to the Texans.
He would not do that. Never would he do that! Did anyone else see him? Did anyone else see him run away?
No one answered. Most looked off as if he were lashing them with a whip. He felt fire in his face. He would lash them if he had something more formidable than a quirt.
Perhaps you let the Texans kill him, and you did nothing to help.
Go look for yourself if you do not believe us.
Go on, the rest of you. See if you can keep these horses at least. I am going to look for my brother.
Look for him in a Texan lodge, among his true brothers.
Heart heavy, Steele's ponies began backtracking the horse guard's line of retreat. He was aware of the danger that he might suddenly confront Texans doing the same thing in a reverse direction, but he had no choice. He must take that risk. He came finally to a set of wagon tracks. Boot marks and crushed grass indicated that several men had moved around afoot. The wagon had circled and retreated in the same general direction by which it had come. For a fleeting moment, he considered the possibility that the Texans had found Badger Boy and carried him away. He dismissed the notion immediately. It was the way of the Texans to kill any Comanche where they found him and leave him lying where he fell, meat for the scavengers. The sun touched fire to thin clouds stretched along the western horizon. Steele's the ponies realized darkness would be upon him soon. He urged his horse into a faster trot, tugging sternly at the reins by which he led the roan. Somewhere, his brother lay injured, perhaps even dead. Steele's the ponies had to find him. But he did not. He spent a sleepless night beside a small seep and at first light was up again, searching in ever-widening circles. For 2 full days he rode back and forth, looking for tracks, watching for Texans. Not until late evening of the 3rd day did he yield to the inevitable. Badger Boy was almost certainly dead. Otherwise, Steele's the ponies would have found him by now. It was painful to think of his brother's body being set upon by wolves or by the buzzards that seemed to await patiently the death of every living thing. But he did not know what more he could do. He felt he had searched every piece of ground where the warriors and the Texans had ridden. Shoulders hunched, his head low, he turned northward. It was a long way to the Red River, and beyond it to where the encampment lay. He would think of Badger Boy every step of the way. It was good that his father, Buffalo Caller, was not here to witness his failure. He would be ashamed, as Steele's the Ponies was ashamed. Stronger even than the shame was grief for a brother lost. Rusty knew the jolting of the wagon must cause the boy intense pain. He imagined he could feel it himself.
Grit your teeth, Andy Pickard. We'll be home after a while.
Jaw clenched, the boy stared up at the sky and made not a whimper. The Comanches had taught him stoicism. Rusty wondered what else they had taught him. Because so many men had sent their families to Tom Blessing's place for mutual defense, it was agreed that the procession would go there first. The Texans drove before them those stolen horses they had managed to recover. The ones lost would have to be regarded as a tax of sorts, payment for living where Indian raids had to be accepted as a cost of business. From a distance, Rusty could see no one at Blessing's. Then, as the inhabitants recognized that the oncoming horsemen were not Indians, they began emerging into the open. Several riders spurred ahead, anxious to see about the women and children they had sent or left there for safety. Among them was Jed Hoskins. Whatever his shortcomings, Rusty decided, he was devoted to his family. Relieved men embraced wives and children. Rusty had no one there except Shanty. The old man limped out to meet him.
Who's that you got in the wagon, Mr. Rusty?
A boy by the name of Andy Pickard.
How come he's dressed up like an Indian?
Well, he kind of is.
He's a white Indian?
Sort of. We're taking him home with us till his leg mends, until we can get word to his kinfolks to come and fetch him. Tom Blessing thinks the boy's father had relatives down there on Lower Brazos River, somewhere around old San Felipe.
Rusty Shannon. Damned if your hair ain't got redder than it already was.
Rusty knew the speaker before he turned and saw him.
Len Tanner. I thought you'd gone back home for good.
Well, the trouble with home is that after you've been gone too long, it ain't home anymore.
How come you're here at Tom Blessing's?
Joined in with some fellas tracking Indians. This is where we ended up. Hey, heard about your Indian boy.
He don't look so fierce.
Well, don't lean in too close. He's liable to take a chunk out of you.
How you gain to talk to him? You don't speak Comanche.
He seems to recognize some words. I figure the language will gradually come back if we talk to him a lot.
Well, I'm better at talking than you are.
I can't argue with that. Come home with us, why don't you?
Us?
Me and Shanty. He's been staying at my place.
Tanner hesitated, then extended his hand. It was not common for white to shake hands with black. Old ways faded slowly. Jed Hoskins walked up, his face solemn.
Shanty, I want to talk to you.
Rusty stiffened, expecting trouble. He thought of his rifle, still tied to the boy's broken leg, but he had his pistol on his hip.
My wife told me what you'd done.
I didn't do nothing much.
Save my youngins. I'd call that a right much.
Rusty stared in disbelief as Hoskins stuck out his hand toward the black man. Hoskins had a shamed look.
I've said some mean hard things again you. I take back every one of them.
Surprised, a little flustered, Shanty accepted the handshake. Hoskins turned to Rusty.
Wife says my youngins and some others got restless being cooped up like chickens. They went outside to play and strayed off too far. All of a sudden, a bunch of Comanches showed up. Of course, they was mainly looking for horses, but they'd take a scout from a kid if they couldn't get one from a grown man. Well, Shanty was out there keeping an eye on the children. He put himself and his rifle between the Indians and the youngins till they got back in the cabin. Like as not, he kept some of them from being killed or carried off.
Rusty did not know what to say. Shanty seemed struck dumb, too. He made a slight grin and shrugged his shoulders. Fowler Gaskin had waited out the Indian danger with the women and children. He listened in angry disbelief.
Oh, what he done wasn't so much. I'd have done the same thing.
You was here, Fowler. Why didn't you?
I didn't have no rifle.
There was rifles around. You could have got you one. But they say you hunkered down in a corner and covered your head. I want everybody to understand. From now on, anybody who bothers this boy Shanty, they got me to whip. And I ain't gonna back down.
What he said goes for me, too.
Shanty seemed embarrassed by the attention. He looked at the ground.
Shanty, that means you can go home if you want to. But you're welcome to keep staying at my place. Me and you have worked right good together.
Well, I reckon I'll stay at least till we get the crops in. It looks to me like you'll need help taking care of that Indian boy.
He's not Indian.
But he thinks he is.
He's liable to be a handful, sure enough.
Yeah, I got two hands, both of them strong.
I'd better stay with you, too, at least a couple of days. Got to watch that youngster's broken leg.
It was in Rusty's mind that the Comanches might set enough store by the boy to come looking for him.
The more of us, the better.
Crowd opinion was that the Indians were unlikely to return, but it seemed the better part of valor to be prepared. Trying to outguess Comanche tactics was risky. Most agreed it was wise to remain at the Blessing Farm overnight and not begin scattering until morning. No one wanted darkness to catch him halfway home. That gave Webb plenty of time to remove the makeshift splint. He returned the rifle to Rusty, replacing it with two thin strips of pine. The Pickard boy had borne the treatment in sullen silence. All the children around the household seemed unable to stop staring, not to mention everybody else. Rusty felt compassion and decided to take a borrowed wagon to carry the boy to the Shannon farm. Rusty drove the wagon. Len Tanner rode close beside him on a bay horse. It was a long-legged animal, befitting its rider.
So, I didn't expect to see you back, especially so soon.
It didn't take long to catch up on the kinfolks. After about a week, everybody seemed to be saying the same things over and over again. Even Mom and Papa. Figured I could help them through their old age, but they got too much family helping them as it is. And then there's them Yankee occupation soldiers. They got this far upriver yet?
I ain't seen them. I guess they've gone to the more settled places first.
Yeah, well, they'll get here soon enough. Then you'll wish they'd never left Ohio or Massachusetts or whatever foreign country they come from. Insolent, overbearing, and think they'd never won a war before.
I noticed that bay horse you're riding has got a U.S. brand on him. Bought him from the government, did you?
Not exactly. Borrowed him, you might say. I needed to leave in a considerable hurry, and I seen him tied to a hitching post. Saddled and all, like he had Len Tanner's name on him.
Huh. Stealing horses. And you used to be a ranger.
I don't lay any claim to him. If the government wants him, it's welcome to come and get him. I won't give him any trouble.
Sounds like you're already in trouble.
Just a little difference of opinion with a Yankee sergeant is all. I was sitting in the grocery, quiet and peaceful, when he came in and wanted to see my parole pass. I told him I didn't have one because I had never been a Confederate soldier. Told him I'd been a Ranger. He couldn't see no difference. Said if I couldn't show him a pass, he was fixing to drag me off to the Yankee compound. Well, after a polite discussion, he ended up on his back all covered in flour. Barrel got turned over during the commotion. He said he'd see to it that I saw the front end of a firing squad. Acted plumb serious about it. This horse looked faster than the plug I'd been riding, so I'd taken the borry of it. Thought it was a good time to go visit some of my old friends.
You're welcome to stay here as long as you want to.
Till the first Yankee soldiers show up. I've seen enough of them to last me a while.
Badger Boy felt strange, lying in a bed that stood on legs. He stared up at a ceiling of wood instead of buffalo hide. It did not even have a smoke hole in the center like the teepees to which he was accustomed. He vaguely remembered having lived in a cabin much like this one. He conjured up a hazy image of hard-packed dirt floors, of climbing a stairway into a loft above an open dog run. And there had been people. He wished he could remember them better, but when he reached for them, they faded like dust carried away in the wind. He wanted to get up and move around, but his leg was immobilized by the splints the Texan shaman had tied against it to hold the broken bone together. He longed to escape this trap that had snared him, but his leg was tightly bound and so painful he couldn't move. He realized that if he untied the splints, the leg would collapse under his weight. They had taken away his breechcloth and moccasins and had given him a long cotton shirt, much too large. To him, it resembled a woman's dress, no fit garment for a fighting man. Badger Boy spent his time listening and observing. He recognized some words spoken here and there. He reasoned that he had known the Texan language before he became a Comanche. Bits and pieces came back to him as he listened to the men talk. When no one was in the room, he tried to speak the words himself. Some came easily. Others twisted his tongue. Meanwhile, he observed the four men who held him captive, trying to figure out who and what they were. The old one they called Preacher was, of course, some manner of shaman, for he spoke often to his gods. The tall, skinny one they called Tanner talked a lot, though Badger Boy had difficulty understanding enough words to find meaning in the one-sided conversation. The old man with the black face and hands puzzled him considerably. He could not remember ever seeing a skin so dark, not even among the Mexicans, who sometimes came from the far west to trade among the people. Most worrisome of all was the one called Rusty. His red hair troubled Badger Boy. Steele's the ponies had told him about a warning from Buffalo Caller not long before his father's death. The old warrior had told of a Texan with red hair, carrying medicine stronger than his own. Years earlier, Buffalo Caller had captured a small Texan boy who had hair the color of rusted iron. Some days afterward, disaster had fallen upon Buffalo Caller and all the people with him. Texans had recovered the boy. From then on, Buffalo Caller had regarded red hair as a dark omen, a hostile power to be avoided. Steele's the Ponies had seen a red-haired Texan in the fight that gave Buffalo Caller his fatal wound. Badger Boy wondered if this might be the same man. Of the Texans he had observed since his capture, this was the only one who fit the description. Often, when one or more of the Texans came to look at him, he feigned sleep. Not when they brought him food, however. Once the pain diminished, his appetite returned with a vengeance. He did not recognize much of what they brought him to eat, but he found it mostly flavorful. One day, Rusty, Tanner, and the black man Shanty brought him a pair of long sticks carved from limbs of an oak tree. Each had cloth wrapped as padding around a fork at its top. Rusty placed the sticks beneath his own arms, demonstrating their use.
Well, these are crutches, so you can start getting around a little.
Badger Boy did not know the word crutch, but he realized the purpose of the sticks.
It ain't good to lay on your back too long. You'll petrify.
The old black man carefully lifted Badger Boy to a sitting position. Rusty and Tanner then positioned themselves on either side of him and brought him to his feet.
Here. Put these under your arms. Now take a hold. All right? Now walk. We'll hold on to you. We won't let you fall.
I walk.
That's okay. Try again. You'll get the hang of it.
This time, Badger Boy took a step without feeling that he was about to fall. Gaining confidence, he took another and another. The two men relaxed their holds, though they did not relinquish them altogether.
You doing fine, boy. The Lord is looking down and smiling on you.
Badger Boy reasoned that the Lord must be one of the Texans' gods. He had heard Preacher Webb talking to him from time to time, though he had never heard a reply. The Comanche spirits often spoke to them in the voices of birds and animals. He reasoned that the Texans' gods must dwell farther away, though if that were the case, he did not understand how they could hear Webb speak. They were a strange lot, these Texans. Badger Boy ventured out onto the dog run and felt the coolness of the breeze. The bright sun made his eyes pinch at first, though he found the light pleasant once they had accommodated to it. He had spent too many days in the room's close confinement.
Beats hell out of staying indoors, doesn't it?
Beats cell. Kine e nagi supa na ide beats cell.
Oh, good thing Preacher Webb has gone away to sermonize. He'd scorch you good for corrupting an innocent boy.
First things I ever learned as a young one was the cuss words. A few dams here and there don't hurt anything. Sometimes they're like a tonic.
Badger Boy understood only the general meaning of what they were saying, but he sensed that it was in good humor. He allowed himself a faint smile. It had been a while since he had felt like smiling about anything.
Oh, look, he's trying to grin. Some people don't think Indian boys have got any humor at all.
They just don't know.
Well, the trouble is, what an Indian is most apt to grin about don't bode no good for a white man.
Preacher Webb wouldn't like to come back and hear this boy using mean language. We need to teach him proper so he'll find favor in the eyes of the Lord.
There was the Lord again, Badger Boy thought. If these Texans put so much store by him, perhaps he should learn a little about him, too. He needed all the gods and beneficent spirits he could summon, for he would require help to get away from here and return north where he belonged. One morning while Badger Boy sunned himself in front of the cabin, Preacher Webb rode in. He'd been absent for several days.
Morning, son. Sunshine truly is the Lord's great healer. You're looking better every day.
He leaned over close, reaching out as if to touch Badger Boy's long braids. He had tried more than once to persuade the lad to cut his hair, white man style. Badger Boy had resisted firmly each time, fighting off the scissors. The Texans had taken everything else that marked him as Comanche. He did not intend to let them cut his hair.
You need a good sprucing up. You got company coming soon.
Company? Somebody comes?
Kin of yours. I located your uncle down by San Felipe.
Uncle?
Your father's brother. His name is Pickard, like yours. Jim Pickard.
Jim Pickard. Jim?
Maybe you called him Uncle Jim?
Uncle Jim. Uncle Jim.
Maybe when you see him. He's your family.
Not my family. My family Comanche.
Well, we'll get you cleaned up in the morning. We don't want him to see you looking like a wild...
Where is San Felipe?
Yonder east.
Far?
Pretty far. Took me most of 2 days to get back.
My uncle. He takes me?
I expect he will. We all figure out the best place for you is with your own kin.
Rusty came in from the field.
Morning, preacher. You come with news?
Sure did. The boy's uncle stopped off at Tom Blessing's to rest and get a supper. He'll be here in a few hours. Thought I'd better come ahead and let you know he's on his way.
Rusty stared at Badger Boy, his thoughts unreadable.
Tom's not the sheriff anymore. Federals turned him out. Appointed one of their own.
Then they're taking over lock, stock, and barrel.
There are soldiers everywhere east of here, setting up provisional local governments. They've appointed their own man governor in Austin.
If Tom's not the sheriff anymore, then I reckon I'm not a deputy. Never saw a dime anyway, so it's no big loss. All right, let's get you shined up for your uncle.
Badger Boy would much prefer to bathe in a nearby creek, but the splints and his injured leg precluded that. He took his bath out of a tin pan, slower and less satisfying. Done, he put on a clean shirt that Rusty brought him. It was much too large. The sleeves were considerably longer than his arms, so he had to roll them up. The tail of the shirt reached past his knees. He had seen boys at Blessing's cabin wearing long shirts and nothing else, no trousers, not even a breechcloth. To him, it still looked like something for a woman, not a man.
Why, Uncle Cump? I no know him, he no know me.
Your blood kin. Everybody ought to be with their blood kin.
You got blood kin?
Someplace, I expect. I sold away when I was just a youngin. But you got a chance to be with your own folks now. You ought to be happy.
Uncle come soon?
If Preacher was right, he should be here real soon.
Rusty stood on the dog run, shading his eyes.
I see Tom Blessing on horseback and somebody in a wagon. Let's get Andy out here in the daylight.
They moved him to a chair on the dog run, the splinted leg extended straight out. Rusty gave Badger Boy a quick inspection.
Now you be on your best behavior and smile.
Badger Boy could not smile on command. He had to feel like it, and he did not feel like it. Anxiety put his stomach in turmoil. His uncle was coming to take him away, farther than ever from the Comanche stronghold. Hampered by his leg, Badger Boy would not be able to put up much resistance. His hands shook. He tried to hide his nervousness by folding them together. Tom Blessing walked up while the other man hauled up on the lines and stopped a team of mules that pulled his wagon.
Hello, Rusty. Shanty, Preacher.
Sorry to hear about your job.
I had a good run. Got somebody here who's traveled a long way to see you.
Andy Pickard, this here's your Uncle Jim. Come to fetch you home.
It was the white man's way to shake hands, but Badger Boy didn't want to. He didn't want anyone to see how his hands were trembling.
Hello?
Uncle Jim stopped a bit short to give Badger Boy a critical study. He did not speak directly to his nephew.
Can't say I see much of my brother in him. Maybe a little round the eyes. I'm afraid he's taken after his mother right smart more.
I remember his mother. She was a handsome woman.
If you like him skinny. I always like to see a good, stout, corn-fed woman myself. They can usually outwork a skinny woman 2-1.
If a workhorse is all you're looking for.
I'll just be impractical, Preacher. Life is hard in this country, and a weak woman can't tote her share of the load. I tell you, good looks wear off pretty soon, but strong hands and a strong back, that's what a Texas woman needs.
Badger Boy listened intently, trying to understand. He stared at Pickard's face, hoping to see something that would bring back a memory of his father. The voice had a faintly familiar quality, but he saw nothing in the face to bring patchy old images back into focus. He gathered that his uncle was saying something unfavorable about his mother. Though he barely remembered her, he felt a rise of indignation. No Comanche would insult his own mother or allow anyone else to do so. His face warming, Badger Boy tried to think of the Texan words to express his disapproval. All that came to him was Comanche.
Pussy Tyvo.
He's speaking Comanche! How come y'all ain't taught him talk civilized?
It's coming back to him a little at a time. He can talk some when he wants to.
And how come he's still got them Indian braids in his hair? I cut him off first thing. He may still be a heathen, but he don't have to look like one.
We've tried to cut his hair. He won't let us.
And since when do you let young'un set the rules? And if he give me any sass, I'd quirk the heathen out of him. And I'd start with that hair.
Uncle Jim drew his knife, and Badger Boy instinctively recoiled. Pickard caught one of the braids. Badger Boy realized he meant to cut it off. Badger Boy's splinted leg kept him from landing right. He had fallen forward, his face landing in the dirt. He was stunned.
Oh, back off, Pickard! Leave the boy alone.
You saw how he came at me? Damn savage, that's what he is!
Webb lifted Badger Boy to his feet and helped him fit the crutches beneath his arm.
The boy's still confused. The Indians have had him since he was little.
There was murder in his eyes! He's past all salvation. Keep him around white folks, and he's apt to kill somebody.
You've got to give it time.
Time for what? To do murder? He'll never change. Maybe we'd all be better off if you'd shot him in the first place and put him out of his misery.
Tom Blessing seemed to swell up even larger than his natural large size.
We'll have no talk about killing. And this boy is your own kin.
Look at him. He ain't white anymore. He's got the killing heart of a Comanche. And if he ever was any kin of mine, he ain't no more.
I've changed my mind. I'm not letting you take him with you.
I don't want to take him with me. Think I'd let him slit the throats of all my family? Or maybe ravage my daughters? And even if he didn't, what would my neighbors think? Me keeping a wild savage and calling him kin? I'd probably have to chain him up like a dog.
Fists clenched, Rusty moved close enough to breathe in Pickard's face.
Then maybe you'd better get in your wagon and go back where you came from.
I'll do more than that. I'll tell the Blue Coat Army about him. I'll tell them to come and get him and put him on a reservation where he belongs. He'll never be nothing but a wild Injun.
Webb and Tanner and Blessing all moved toward Pickard. He backed off, his hands raised defensively, his eyes cut from one man to another.
Hey, now, four against one ain't a fair deal.
The others are staying out of it. It's just me and you, if you want it that way. The boy's no animal to be put in a cage.
That's just what he is, an animal.
Badger Boy was amazed that the two men would threaten a fight over him. He had not understood all that was said, but he knew his uncle meant him no good, and Rusty had come to his defense. That did not seem logical, inasmuch as his uncle had a blood tie to him. This reinforced his long-held acceptance that Texans were a strange lot. Trying to make sense of them could give a man a headache. Tom Blessing pushed between Rusty and Pickard. He was a formidable presence when he was aroused.
Now, men, you're liable to do something you'll both hurt for tomorrow. Mr. Pickard, I think you'd best get in your wagon and start home. It's a long ways to San Felipe.
Boy's a menace. My advice to you is that you send him back to them wild Injuns where he belongs. Or give him to the Yankee Army. They probably got a place for the likes of him.
Tanner gave Badger Boy a look of pity.
Might be better he was back with the Comanches.
Don't say such a thing where he can hear it. I give him ideas.
It don't need giving. It don't take a smart man to know what he's thinking when he stares off to the north and shuts you out like you wasn't there.
Oh, Blessing, you don't really think the Yankees would take him away and force him to the reservation and him white?
There's no telling. They might. Or they might try to turn him into a blue coat Indian scout.
He's just a youngin' yet.
There was many a youngin' killed in the war. In any case, they won't bother asking me or you what we think. They didn't ask me my feelings when they took away my sheriff's job. They just slammed the door. We're a defeated enemy.
Andy Pickard, I don't know what we're gonna do with you.
Badger Boy wondered, too. Preacher Webb walked up beside Rusty.
That boy doesn't seem half as disturbed over this as you are.
He's too young yet to know how it can hurt, not having any kin in the world. But I know.
Rusty walked halfway out to the shed and stood a while, staring at nothing in particular. When he came back, he appeared to have come to a difficult decision.
Tanner's right. You'd be better off running free with your Comanches than penned up with strangers on a reservation. Soon as you're fit to travel, I'll take you.
He won't be able to ride for a while yet.
We'll wait till he can.
You can't take him all the way back to the Comanches. They'd almost surely kill you.
How else can I get him there?
You can take him as far as the Monahan farm, and maybe as far as the Red River. He can make the last part of the trip by himself.
In the long run, this may be the wrong thing to do. But in the short run, I can't see any other way. Being a captive on the reservation would be like dying an inch at a time.
Sometimes you have to get through today the best you can, and trust tomorrow to the Lord.
Rusty looked toward his field. The crops were almost all in.
Won't be much for somebody else to take care of if I'm gone for a while, Len. You've got nowhere to go. Wouldn't you like to winter here?
It's better than camping in some brushy draw when the northers come down. But hadn't you rather I'd come with you?
I'd rather you were here, watching over the farm.
Well, I ain't no hurry about moving back home. I can stay here with Mr. Tanner and look after my own place just the way I've been doing.
Thank you. I don't know how long I may be gone.
It won't matter. This place will be waiting for you when you get back. Me and Shanty won't let old Fowler Gaskin tote it away.
In another week, Webb removed the splints.
Test your weight real careful and trust in the crutches.
I stand. Pretty soon, no more crutches.
Don't get in too big a hurry. Rome was not built in a day.
Who? Rome?
Don't worry about it.
Shandy and Tanner both grinned to see Badger Boy without the splints. Rusty was not smiling. If anything, he appeared regretful.
Why are you not glad for me?
Well, I am, in a way. But I'm not anxious to see you leave us. I was hoping maybe you'd
change your mind if you stayed here long enough.
My mind not change.
In any case, getting rid of the splints means he can wear something decent now instead of that long shirt.
Badger Boy was ill at ease in the white man's shirt and trousers Rusty gave him. A floppy old hat dropped down to his ears and had to be stuffed out with strips of newspaper to fit comfortably on his head. He kept his moccasins because they fit his feet better than anything the men could offer. Webb observed him with reserved satisfaction.
Except for the braids, he looks like a farm boy from any place. Nobody take him for a Comanche.
I am Comanche. Clothes, no change. Rusty, when we go?
Another week, maybe two. We've got to know you can stand a long ride.
Badger Boy sensed that Rusty continued to hope he would change his mind and stay. But when the north wind blew at night, he imagined he could hear the voices of his people calling. Nothing was going to change his mind. Three saddled horses and a pack mule stood waiting. Rusty shook hands with Shanty, then Tanner.
In case something drastic comes up, Len, you know where I'll be.
Tell them Monahan girls Len Tanner said howdy. And kiss them for me if you got the nerve.
Kissing the girls is more in your department.
Be watchful, Andy. And take care of yourself.
Tanner clasped the boy's hand.
You ever get tired of that Indian life, come see me. There's lots more things I can teach you.
Damn betcha.
I think you may have taught him too much already.
Rusty was able to follow a well-defined wagon trail for better than half the day, but then he had to turn off of it when it shifted due westward. He angled across country toward the northwest. Webb rode alongside him, Andy trailing a little way behind, Indian style.
Years ago, first time you ever rode with the volunteers, we followed Indian raiders along the same route.
That's right. We camped for the night yonder where the trail crosses the creek. We're not stopping there this time. I've got another place in mind for tonight's camp.
You sure you know what you're doing?
I'm taking a chance. He's been having trouble remembering. This may just jog his memory.
Some memories are best left buried.
Not when you need them to tell you who you are.
Webb shook his head in doubt. For a time, Rusty feared darkness might catch them before they reached the place he was aiming for. But then he saw the line of small trees and knew he had reached the creek crossing he remembered with such terrible vividness. Andy had sat slumped in the saddle, looking as if he might be dozing. Now he sat up straight, looking around with serious interest.
This place, I think I've been here.
He pointed to a tree that apparently had been bent out of shape as a sapling and had grown crookedly into something like a question mark.
That tree, I remember.
One tree looks about like another.
Not that one. Bad place.
Bad? How so?
I don't know. Feel bad spirits here. Damn bad.
Webb frowned. Tanner's teachings had left an indelible mark on the boy's speech.
We'll camp here for the night.
Something happened here. Something bad.
Do you remember it?
Andy shook his head, but kept looking around anxiously as if he saw or felt something the men could not.
Maybe we ought to move on a little farther.
There's wood here and water. Been others camped here before. Here, hold on to me.
He helped Andy down from the saddle and handed him a long stick whittled into a rude cane to aid him in walking now that he had left the crutches behind. The boy seemed reluctant to venture out. He leaned on the cane and kept watching as if he expected something awesome to rush at him out of the trees. Rusty and Webb took what they needed from the mule's pack. Webb built a small fire while Rusty led Badger Boy to a small pile of rocks beneath a tree. Rusty's skin went cold as he remembered.
I came this way once with Preacher Webb and Tom Blessing and a bunch of others trailing a Comanche war party. They'd taken a lot of horses. But worse than that, they'd stolen a woman and a small boy.
He waited, watching for a reaction. He was not sure he saw one.
They killed the woman here. This is where we found her, where we buried her. We never found any sign of the boy.
That boy... him, me?
Yes.
How come I don't remember?
Well, you were young. Maybe you tried hard not to remember.
Andy seated himself on the ground, favoring the weak leg. He sat staring at the unmarked grave. He said nothing. Rusty waited for him to react, to speak, but no words came.
Coffee's ready if you are.
Looking back over his shoulder, Rusty walked to the fire.
Thanks.
You remember anything?
I can't tell. It's like he's in a trance or something. Indians have got a way of sensing things they can't see. He may have gotten that from them. Andy?
Rusty turned to see the boy bent over, face in his arms, his body trembling.
Andy. It's all right, Andy. It was a long time ago.
Preacher Webb tried to squat down on the boy's other side, but his knees were too stiff. He remained standing.
Well, seems like he's finally remembered.
A boy so young couldn't stand looking into hell. He put up a high wall to shut it out. Now you've made him see over that wall.
Later, Andy stared into the small blaze of the campfire. Rusty and Webb had finally prevailed on him to eat a small supper.
This place, they stop with us here. They eat a horse. Then they take Mama. Many times she screams. I try to go to her, but they whip me. Long time, no more screams. I cry, they whip me. I make myself not cry. They don't whip me no more.
At least now you remember who you are.
I am Andy Pickard. All the same, I am Badger Boy. How can I be two people?
Rusty had no answer. They were a couple of hours short of the Monahan farm, and Andy stiffened.
Something moves. That way.
West, huh? Rusty.
Where, Andy?
Somewhere there. I feel it.
Feel it? You sure it's not your imagination?
Then Rusty saw horsemen straggle from a ragged row of trees a few hundred yards away. He reined up.
Whoa! See them, preacher?
Not until just now. Son, you sure got sharp eyes.
Not see. Feel it. Inside.
Indians?
Can't be sure at the distance.
Not Indians. White.
If it's hold-up artists, we haven't got much worth stealing.
We have three horses and a mule. For some, that would be enough.
Rusty studied the terrain. It was open in all directions out to the trees.
If they come at us, this is as good a place as any to stand them off. Come on, Andy. I'll help you down.
We fight?
Not unless they bring a fight to us.
The horseman hesitated briefly, perhaps discussing the situation, then moved cautiously across the open prairie. Rusty counted five. As they closed the distance, he could see three blue uniforms.
Soldiers. One's hunched over like he's hurt.
Andy, you might ought to stick those braids under your hat. We didn't bring you this far to have the army take you away from us.
Two riders were in civilian clothes. They sat awkwardly, hands tied to their saddles. Two soldiers held rifles ready for action. The third straightened up with some difficulty. Rusty recognized the uniform of a lieutenant. He lowered his rifle and stepped forward.
You all come in. We're peaceful.
The two enlisted men were black. One wore sergeant's stripes. The officer's dusty coat showed a dark bloodstain on the shoulder. A bulge indicated a heavy bandage beneath it. The lieutenant's face was drained to a pale clay color. Both prisoners were heavily bearded. Rusty looked a second time before he recognized them.
Pete Dawkins? Scully?
The lieutenant glanced apprehensively toward the two enlisted men. He seemed reassured to see they had not relaxed their stance with the rifles.
You know these prisoners?
I wish I could say I don't. It's been my bad luck to know them for several years. What they been up to this time?
Well, I hope you have no interest in setting them free. My men would drop you in a moment.
Oh, no need to worry about us. I arrested Pete myself once, when I was with the Rangers. He was stealing horses.
Well, then he's still at the same trade. He's just not very good at it.
Who'd he hit this time?
A good Union family just north of here. Horse people.
By the name of Monahan?
Yeah, that's right. The Monahan man fought him off, but this Dawkins wounded one.
Which one? Do you know the name?
Evan Gifford. Are you acquainted with him?
I know his wife. Good woman. They're good people, all of them. How bad was he hurt?
Well, they said he was wounded worse in the war and got over that. He'll recover from this.
Rusty knew his compassion should be for Evan Gifford, but most of it was for Geneva. He imagined how it must have shaken her to see her husband brought in shot again.
Damn you, Pete! Haven't you Dawkins's caused the Monahans grief enough?
Sullen, Pete Dawkins looked past Rusty as if he could not see him. Scully's head was down, his shoulders pinched in an attitude of despair.
We had some trouble capturing these two. They killed one of my troopers and put a bullet through my shoulder.
I'm sorry to hear that,
Ames. Lieutenant Ames. This is Sergeant Bailey and Private Cotter. You say you're a ranger?
Well, used to be. They cut us loose when the war ended. I'm Rusty Shannon, and this here's Preacher Webb. The boy's Andy Pickard.
My father knew the Rangers in the Mexican War. He said they would charge hell with half a bucket of water.
They did, several times. Where are you headed with these two?
Back to the Monahan farm to get positive identification.
The Monahans would gladly hang Pete for you. By his toes, by his neck, any old way you want it done. And I'd be glad to help him.
Any hanging will be up to a court.
Lieutenant, you okay?
Rusty stepped forward to catch him in case he fell.
Don't you touch Lieutenant Ames.
It's all right, Bailey. He's trying to help.
Yes, sir.
The sergeant did not shift the rifle's muzzle away from Rusty.
Lieutenant, you'd better get off that horse and rest a while. When you're up to it, we'll escort you to the Monahans.
Look, I've come this far. I can go the rest of the way. We ask for no favors.
We were headed there ourselves. You favor us by taking Pete Dawkins away. He hanged a couple of Monahans back in the day.
A rebel hangman. And to the same family, no less. Son, you've got a lot to answer for.
You sure you're strong enough to keep riding?
Yeah, I'm strong enough. Two Johnny Reb bullets didn't kill me at Chickamauga. I'll survive one from a bushwhacking horse thief.
All right. We'll ride with you.
Yeah. The lieutenant looked down at Andy.
I've forgotten what he said your name is, young fella.
Andy.
Rusty feared Andy's halting use of the language would give him away, but the boy said nothing more. The sergeant poked his rifle in Pete's direction.
Move out, you back shooter.
I don't take bossing from no nigger.
Then you'll take it from me. Move out like he says, or I'll shoot you myself.
Scully was usually a follower, but he started first.
You ain't hang me yet. My old daddy's got influence. Ain't no jury around here will ever convict me for killing
him. Won't be a local jury. You killed a soldier, so you'll be tried by a military court.
Clearly, Pete had not considered that possibility. He looked as if the officer had struck him with a club. Scully slumped lower in his saddle.
Pete's not worth the price of the rope that hangs him, but I'd be glad to make the investment.
The government will provide the rope.